Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm a huge fan.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I've watched, I think, every single debunking video you've ever made, some of them multiple times. And I think they're just immensely interesting, entertaining, and educational. And I'm kind of curious about how you entered this path, because there's a kind of a funny moment in one of the early Flat Earth debunking videos where, this is from, I think, 6 years ago, where you make this comment, which I'm sure you genuinely meant at the time, where you say something along the lines of, "I'm done with this. I've got better shit to do. Good luck."
And finally, to the Globebusters. I don't know you. I don't know what motivates you. You might believe the things that you say. You might be deliberately manipulating your followers to earn money and feel special. I can't be sure. You can respond to this video or not. I don't care. I'm definitely not going to be making any more of these because I have much better things to do, and I'm going to get back to doing those things now.
I fancied myself Mr. Tutorial. I had hit some success making all of this academically aligned content, chemistry, biology, math, etc., like just stuff that students need. And I got sucked into this other thing because of these the Globebusters. And I, made that standalone piece, but I thought, okay, this is a one-off. I'm not doing this. But I had no idea how fun it is, how good I am at it, how much people like it, and also the societal need. I kind of realized all of those things as I began doing it. So,
Right. And then it gets 15 million views,
yeah.
and it's clear there's an enormous appetite for
Yeah.
it. Did you have a sort of crisis about whether or not this was a wise path to go down? Because I know that everyone is always torn with this, like, am I being trapped by some kind of audience capture forces? Am I
Yeah.
doing the right thing? Just because people like something doesn't mean that it's the right thing to do, obviously.
That's right. Yeah, it I toyed with the idea of making a separate channel, like a Professor Dave Debunks or something. And I just started doing a few more debunks and thought, well, it's on the main channel. In my head, I just thought, I don't want to do something that's going to make me seem less academic, such that it will cut into how teachers view me and how willing they are to recommend my tutorials for their students or play my videos in class and things like that. I was still hanging on to this idea of I'm the, I'm, you watch me in school, students watch me. That's who I am. That's what my channel is. But then once I saw what that kind of content was becoming and the need for it, and I have gotten nothing but tremendously positive feedback, even from within academia, right? It's not, it's only bolstering my reputation within academia because I'm sort of the attack dog for academic science, right? I defend science from the charlatans. And so they're actually tremendously appreciative, especially in this current climate where we're seeing all the funding being slashed and everything. So scientists and academics are appreciative of it. And so, now it seems ridiculous. I at some point I just decided, look, this is who I am. I'm both of these things. I make these tutorials and I do these debunks and it's Dave. It's the same guy. Why should I split it apart? Why should I be bashful about doing it? Why, I'm just going to lean into this and I'm glad I didn't. So.
Yeah. And to be clear, I agree with virtually everything you've ever said in any of these things. So if I'm talking about them in any kind of a critical way, it's more of like a about the questions that I wonder about these things myself, because I often find myself in somewhat analogous territories. And there's always this question of, by engaging, am I making things worse? And obviously this, I've gotten some ridiculous criticisms in that vein. I made a piece about the conservation of psychedelic toads years ago and got all these attacks from people saying, well, by merely mentioning the existence of psychedelic toads, you have undermined your own conservation message, because there were some people that wouldn't have even known about psychedelic toads if you'd never made a documentary about it. Therefore, you did the wrong thing. And I thought, well, this is kind of a weird attitude. Then why, by if this is the logic, then you can never talk about anything bad, because you may potentially promote that bad thing by virtue of criticizing it or acknowledging it in any way. But there, the flip side is, there is a reality to someone like Ashton Forbes, who I've never heard of, right? This is someone when you did a debunk on Ashton Forbes, I wasn't like, it's about time someone took down Ashton Forbes.
Which
like
some people did. Some people were aware of this guy and were like, oh, thank you for doing this.
And based on everything that you said, I don't doubt for a moment that he is a insufferable, vile character. Yeah. It's not to defend him. It's almost like, where is the line? Because there's so many crackpots, there's so many wingnuts. And most of these people, you have taught me about more crackpots. I don't think I knew about any of them other than Eric Weinstein, Sabine Hossenfelder. Maybe that's it.
I mean, RFK, like RFK, high profile ones. Yeah. But there are certainly ones that I sort of, put in the spotlight. But the thing is, there's absolutely no way. If you don't know who these people are, if you haven't drunk their Kool-Aid and then you watch my content, you're not going to like go be part of their cult because I so thoroughly eviscerate and expose them that there's just no way that they can be viewed in any positive light if you're introduced to them through me, right? It's only trolls that come over who don't have the courage to watch the content that then just kind of get on my case without having the courage to press play and see what's going on. So that's every day, all day, is just trolls.
Right. Yeah. It's so complicated because I see this play out all the time as well with people like, this is really not so much of an issue now, but a few years ago with Jordan Peterson, this was, I think, an issue where obviously people could tell that the message that he was spreading had potentially dangerous implications or was moving in a direction that could be dangerous. But the flip side was he'd written the self-help book that was, in my opinion, pretty innocuous and probably did actually help some people. And so the virulence of the opposition, I think, actually may have almost served to make him like a sort of martyr, like, oh, everyone is being so unfair to Jordan Peterson because he's telling the truth. And this is exactly why he's so important. I do think that that was actually like a sort of element of what propelled Jordan Peterson to the degree of fame that he experienced. I think it was the Kathy Newman interview.
So you're saying that anyone who believes in equality, whether you call them feminists, call them whatever you want to call them, should basically give up because it ain't going to happen.
Only if they're aiming at equality of outcome.
So you're saying give people equality of opportunity, that's fine.
It's not only fine, it's eminently desirable for everyone, for individuals and for society.
But still women aren't going to make it. That's what you're really saying.
It depends on your measurement techniques. They're doing just fine in medicine.
That felt emblematic of a culture where irrational scolds are telling reasonable people not to tell the truth, basically. I think that was kind of the basic idea that came out of that interview that really resonated with a lot of people. And so as all this was playing out, I wondered, are people doing the right thing by attacking him with such intensity when maybe this is actually just playing into the very appeal of him for many of his fans? To this day, I don't know. I don't know with so many of these things. I mean, there's another example of this that you may not be familiar with, but there was a journalist named Joseph Bernstein. He was one of the really early people to call out the comedian Sam Hyde. I don't know if you're familiar with Sam Hyde.
No, I do follow comedy. How do I not know that?
Yeah, it's surprising, especially because he's like a big internet. He's probably the single most prominent right-wing comedian.
Oh, that may be why.
and unlike someone like Steven Crowder, he's actually funny.
What if Adolf Hitler said that you're such a physical beast, dude. You're such a physical, nasty beast, dude. You're such a nasty physical beast right now, bro, that I'm basically gonna make you in charge of a platoon of panzers, okay? You're basically so hulked up and shredded that I have no choice but to make you a legend in Nazi Germany.
This is one of the things that makes him a more complicated figure, is that most people will acknowledge that even if his politics are horrifying, that he's able to successfully work as a comedian. So Joseph Bernstein early on sees Sam Hyde, sees that he's promoting all this anti-Semitic stuff and that he's basically the first iteration of alt-right kind of racist 4chan whatever stuff, and decides we're going to go all in and try and destroy this guy, get him canceled early on, probably like 2015 or something like that. And it works. His show is taken off Adult Swim, but in taking him down, he becomes a martyr,
right.
And he becomes much, much, much more successful and becomes a sort of iconic character. And I don't doubt for a moment that the extreme success of Sam Hyde is in part because this journalist saw him as a threat and decided we've got to take this guy down. Now, it's complicated because I don't, if you could go back in time, I don't know that Joseph Bernstein did the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. This is someone who legitimately was participating in the burning of Jewish books.
I practice a different religion of Judaism. I'm still white, so I get what you guys are all about. It looks like different religion. And this book right here, so I really hate this book. This is Propaganda by Edward Bernays, which is the introduction of a lot of advertising concepts in the
not to mention World War I propaganda.
Early 1900s. And this is the type of awful tool, propaganda.
Oh, God, is Jew behind advertising?
It was used by Goebbels convince the Germans to burn over 8 million Jews.
It's a Nazi
book. It was 6. You know, there were legitimate reasons to object to him, but I think it backfired spectacularly. And this is always the question that I have with these sorts of things, is what is the strategic move when you're in a culture that's gradually being subsumed by this insanity?
It is hard to say. And I would argue that whatever you choose, the wrong answer is always nothing. To do nothing is always going to be the incorrect move, I think. Because whatever avenue you take, whether it's for this comic, or I think Jordan Peterson is a great person to talk about too, because once you kind of close off more traditional channels that can be available to them to disseminate their disinformation or hateful rhetoric or whatever it is, they kind of end up getting backed into a corner, and then their movement gets backed into that corner where they inevitably have nowhere to go but become more and more extreme to kind of concentrate the essence of that movement. And Jordan Peterson's a great example of someone who got more and more extreme to the point where he just became so cartoonish that it was undeniable. It's fairly universally known that Jordan Peterson is a gigantic charlatan in a way that was not known 3 or 4 years ago. And that's just because he's just gotten more and more ridiculous with climate change denial and all these other things that are tangential to like the initial, the first things that kind of put him on the map, the no compelled speech and like all this stuff that was very cleverly disguised rhetoric, right? That captured a lot of rational people. So you start there, but then you just kind of back them into a corner until it becomes obvious to 90% of people that they're completely full of it.
And I wonder to what extent this is a product of them being backed into the corner as well. I mean, yeah. That's the other kind of tragic dimension of this, is if people had said like, hey, Dr. Peterson, you know what? That whole thing about being forced by the government to use the people's preferred pronouns, that maybe is a step too far. Okay, point taken, but we should still be respectful to trans people.
Yeah.
And that was the end of it.
Right.
Would he have...
But it was never going to be the end of it, right? If he was ignored, he would continue down a certain path, right? But by shining a spotlight on... Because the rhetoric was deceptive from day one, right? He completely blew out of proportion what was going on legally there, right? Nobody has ever been put in jail for using the incorrect pronouns or anything like that. He was just fabricating all of that. Mm. But like Sabina is another example. So I'm very proud of my content on Sabina because I'm kind of that. I'm like that that BuzzFeed journalist for that comic. Like I'm that guy for Sabina, right? She was beginning to go down this problematic path, and I'm really the first main whistleblower to go, hey, you guys, there's something really wrong here. Look at the messages that she's putting out here. This is very shady stuff. And I initially got pushback, right, from a lot of science-minded people that had been watching her content and kind of weren't seeing what's going on between the lines. They would catch a couple update videos on some random new science news or something like that, and weren't seeing what you need to see if you're looking at her, you know, under a magnifying glass, what really is fueling this rhetoric.
In case I haven't made myself perfectly clear as to what these goals are, allow me to reiterate one last time. Democracy is imperiled when a disproportionate amount of money and decision-making power is in the hands of a few oligarchs. That's fascism. The goal is fascism and a continued transfer of wealth into the oligarchy while the entire middle class gets shoved under the poverty line. That's it. That's the basis for the assault on intellectualism, on research aimed at public benefit, on protests of the military-industrial complex. All of it. Unfortunately, the campaign to convince Americans that science is hopelessly corrupt is working well. In record numbers, people are accepting the transfer of decision-making power on scientific and economic issues from their hands into the hands of a fascist cabinet allied with corrupt oligarchs, who are ruthlessly hell-bent on removing regulations and panels of real experts in order to increase their own wealth and power. The corruption is not in science, but in the government, due to a death grip from the private sector that has completely asphyxiated an institution that once served the American people.
And through my content, and then sort of the amplification of that, and the realization of what I was saying, and then other, other platforms sort of agreeing and saying, yes, this is actually really problematic. She's now much more largely known to be a charlatan, and it's we're seeing now finally people realizing that, and then the response from her and her being pushed into an even more extreme direction, most recently defending Eric Weinstein and like just making it abundantly clear where she's aligned, you know, politically and everything. And there has to be those people that help everyone see it first, and then watch how that nudges that figure in a particular direction, which only further confirms what's being exposed, you know? So it's never going to be do nothing and just leave them to their own devices and allow the general public to be oblivious to who they are and allow them to continue to have access to all of the venues and all of, you know, all of the platforms that they have had in the, you know, yeah. Expose. That's how I see it. Yeah,
and you're certainly the first that I had seen, because I think the way most people are, where I'd seen it on the, you know, the algorithm and recommended whatever take on like fusion or something was. And I thought like, oh, okay. Oh, she's a scientist. She's a physicist, I guess.
Yeah. And the fusion is a great example, because that if you're just kind of casually watching a video, even a video like that has part of her agenda in it, where she's attributing public sector work to the private sector. She's literally lying about what people at the Max Planck Institute, she's attributing that work to this fusion startup, right? It's all part of that rhetoric of the public sector can't do anything. They're idiots. It's got to all come from, you know, private sector, rogue geniuses. Academia is communism. All of this ridiculous rhetoric, right? And so there's morsels of it in all of her content. But if you're not looking for it, you don't notice it, right? Because you don't know where this new fusion research is coming from. And she's a physicist, so you're going to take for granted whatever she says, right? But once you see it, then you see it in all of her content. You know, once the agenda is made clear, it's unmistakable.
In your videos, you allude to possible explanations for why she might be doing this. And this is kind of entering into the realm of investigative journalism.
Right, which I'm not at all. So
you kind of are.
Yeah.
I mean, if no one else is illuminating these things and researching them adequately, I think it's ironic that these people that, at least on paper, shouldn't be considered journalists are often ending up being the ones doing this fundamental work and recognizing these trends that journalists should have recognized.
Yes.
I mean, it's like the fact that Tim Dillon was probably the first person that I'm aware of publicly to say, what has Eric Weinstein ever done?
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone goes, Eric Weinstein's a genie. Does anyone know why? What is there anything they've done? No, truly. Because all they do is talk. Is there anything they've built? Is there one appliance that they have anything to do with? Have they come up with something even like the Rotato, which peels and slices a potato as you could? Like, is there one thing any of them have done except whack off Elon Musk and talk? I'm literally asking.
Had anyone made that remark before him? And it's like he's saying it in a
comedic
joke,
way,
but at the same time, that I think was probably the initial chink in the armor.
I think so.
Yeah. And you wonder, why wasn't this acknowledged? Why weren't people talking about this? And I think, again, it comes to maybe the media establishment underestimating the influence of these sort of alternative information networks, just like YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, how many people watch Eric Weinstein interviews?
Mm-hmm.
Like tens of millions, easily, maybe even hundreds of millions if you combine all the Joe Rogan appearances and things like that. And yet no one, other than like what one puff piece in The Guardian, no one seems to have ever really investigated, well, who the fuck is this guy? And why is he on all these podcasts? And what is his thing that he's promoting? And oh, he does in fact work for Peter Thiel. And what is the significance of that?
Yeah. Yeah, what's his agenda? And so, yeah, when I say it's my ability to investigate is the ability to recognize a style of rhetoric, match it to the motives of someone else. It's all based on words, right? If someone's saying, I can tell you if something is true or not true based on the scientific veracity of it or anything like that. But where it ends is, you know, I can speculate that Sabina's on Peter Thiel's payroll. I don't know how to prove that. I don't know what the next step is for that. I'm not a detective. I don't know how to do that. All I can do is say, look at how her rhetoric is lockstep, 100% matching every single motive of Peter Thiel's, every political aspiration of his, right? Everything that he wants to brainwash the world into believing is what Sabina's saying, right? And it matches Weinstein as well, which is why she came to his defense, right? But I can't prove these things. It's there's obviously a chance that it's just clickbait like the rest of her content, because she got almost 1 million views on that video too. It could be just I'm just gonna make this video and piss people off and it'll get a bunch of clicks, right?
Or even without being paid, people will align themselves with power. It's not like all of the people in the Rogan sphere are getting paid by Joe Rogan.
Sure.
Just Joe Rogan is incredibly powerful and it's professionally advantageous to have a good relationship with him and not insult him needlessly, because there would be consequences associated with it.
Right.
So even if she's not being paid by Peter Thiel, which I have no idea, I know people who have not been paid by Peter Thiel, but have been invited to feasts by him.
Yeah.
And the implication when something like that happens is, oh shit, I'm having a, I've just got flown out by Peter Thiel with, and I'm going to at this dinner with all these powerful people. And why would I want to fuck this up?
Right.
And why would I want this guy as my enemy?
Sure.
When maybe he could be my ally? Wouldn't that be so much better?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't actually require that much. I think this is one of the things that people underestimate about influence, is they always have this kind of 70s idea of someone opens up a briefcase full of cash, mm-hmm. and then that's all it takes to make somebody say whatever you want. Sure, I do believe that there is some of that happens, but I think it's often not even required.
Sure.
You can do this without the briefcase full of cash.
Yeah, indirect rewards and things. But so I leave that aspect to others. All I can do is point out what's objectively incorrect from the standpoint of science, and just expose at whatever kind of rhetoric I come across,
And the agenda, not to say that there's necessarily a single one, you've outlined pro-Israel, anti-government, pro-privatization of science. I mean, what is your sense? And then there's also, of course, Christian nationalist weirdness as well. What is your source of the motivation of a lot of these people?
The best way that I can make sense of it is when you have an oligarchy where you just have a very small number of people hoarding an unbelievable percentage of the global wealth. The goal is to continue that transfer of wealth and power, right? But how do you do that? It's almost doesn't work entropically, right? How do you continue to get all of the wealth to concentrate even further in just these handful of people up there, right? You have to be devious, right? There's a very large activation energy there to try to get it going that way. So you have to control the way the public thinks, right? You have, like, the fervor, like the way that, like, Eric Weinstein talks about Elon Musk, for example, right? Elon Musk is the richest guy in the world, and he benefits from people thinking that he's this genius and he knows better and we should give him all the money because the government sucks and universities suck, right? And so there's two things. Number one, you have to you know, there are governments and there's the private sector. And historically, there's always been a seesaw thing going on here, right? There are times in which the government has had undue power over the private sector. And right now, that's not the case. It's the complete opposite, where the private sector has way too much influence and control over the government. And the private sector wants to continue lessening the power of the government to regulate the private sector. So that's where you get things like DOGE, where you go in and under the guise of cutting wasteful spending, they're just dismantling any industry or any institution that can regulate them, right? And that's what RFK is doing right now. He's gutting CDC, FDA. Everybody who knows what they're talking about is either being fired or they're quitting. And he's just replacing them with Robert Malone and all these frauds. They're just completely dismantling public health. So that's part one, right? Making it impossible for the government to control the private sector in any significant way. And then number two is trying to undermine any kind of trust in expertise, or even the concept of expertise in general, right? All academic scientists, anybody who actually knows what they're talking about, are corrupt, right? They're not, they can't be trusted. Universities are woke indoctrination camps. So first of all, don't go there. Don't go to one and get an education, because it's all Marxist trans nonsense. And then also any work that comes out of there is corrupt and can't be trusted. And so it's just trying to create a monopoly on information flow. Right here, like, don't listen to scientists. Listen to my pawn, Eric Weinstein, who's going to tell you how science is, right? And it's a crisis. No physics has been done since 1973, and we need to go to other planets, and Elon Musk is going to take us there. So this is, you know, it's just this bizarre alternate reality that they're trying to kind of implant in the minds of as many people as possible. That's how I see it. Basically, those two tiers there.
Yeah, I would agree. But then the other aspect of this that always troubles me is, you know, I think atheism got a bad name, and in part because of this kind of reputation of atheists being smug and overconfident and condescending and not appreciating the mysteries of reality, thinking that they know everything, whatever. So this kind of r/atheism style of rhetoric became very unfashionable, to the point that not just unfashionable, I would say that it became sort of ineffective. This kind of know-it-all scientist wagging their finger at you became something that people were totally horrified by. And so then the question I've always had is, all right, if not that, then what? Then what is the strategy? Because I don't know about you, but I have a pretty ideologically diverse friend group, and I actually know quite a few people who are like anti-vax or have various alternative beliefs. And when you're actually sitting in a room with somebody, you're not gonna like stem lord wag your finger at them with facts, because you realize immediately that this is just not, they didn't arrive at this position through a concern for the factual state of reality to begin with. And so what is the effective strategy? Your strategy works really well on someone like me. I'm watching and I'm thinking, oh, that's great, that's fantastic, I agree completely. But do you have reason to believe that it works for somebody that is
ingrained in that mentality?
Yeah,
absolutely. People have emailed me, thanks for setting me free from that. I mean, it has nothing to do with atheism, to be clear. I mean, I identify as an atheist, but I'm not passionate about it, and I don't have any content talking about it. A lot of the Christian nationalist organizations that I expose, like Discovery Institute, try to paint me as an angry atheist, because it's an easy way to get their flock to avoid my content, right? The goal for them is to get their constituents to not ever watch any of my content. And they're usually successful at that, because if you do watch it, it's pretty undeniable the way that I put it out there. My strategy is just to relentlessly offer these facts, but then also expose the lies and the motivations of the people that are propagating this stuff, right? And if you're somebody that's a lot of anti-vaxxers are just, they fall for a very easy caricaturesque villainization of Big Pharma, and they're kind of a follow the money type, right? okay, I helped them follow the money from, you know, tonight I'm going to be debating these jerks, Steve Kirsch and Pierre Corey. Follow the money on Pierre Corey. What does he charge for a consultation? What does he charge for telehealth? What do these frontline doctors charge for ivermectin prescriptions, right? And all this other stuff. They're getting filthy rich off of this stuff. And when you frame it that way, you know, what did Andrew Wakefield get? What was his bribe to pen that fraudulent Lancet study tying MMR to autism, which set off the next 30 years of this vaccines cause autism bullshit, right? How, what did he make off of that? £500,000. What do you think of that, right? When you show them, right, if they're follow the money types, you help them follow the money and see how they've been duped by exactly the figures that they think are champions of the people, you know?
Yeah.
So
this still strikes me as sort of optimistic and dependent on logic, which is what frightens me. I mean, yeah. I remember at the beginning of the pandemic thinking a lot of people are going to die and this is going to be a nightmare. But at least the one thing I can say with certainty is that this anti-vax stuff is over. At least this is...
How naive.
Yes, exactly. How naive. How naive to think that a pandemic would convince people about the value of vaccination.
Off the rails now.
That was a spectacularly wrong prediction on my part. Mm-hmm. And the overarching issue seems to be that, you know, it's similar to what people say about climate change. Actually, I think this was in one of your recent videos. You were interviewing like a climatologist or something, and he's saying people aren't going to realize until, you know, the water's at their front doorstep or something like that. But my question is, will they even realize then?
Will they realize then? Yeah. Or will they be duped into blaming something else? I mean, look, this, you know, obviously I get asked this question a lot, and there's no silver bullet, right? There's no way that you're going to convince 100% of the people. But you get as many as you can. And then what else you do is you arm the general populace with all of the tools necessary to combat these lines of thinking in their own personal spheres. So if somebody has a friend that's a climate change denier and they're spouting the lukewarmism of Matt Ridley and these other kind of figures, watch my video, right? And just now you're armed, right? All of this crap they're saying, right, we're only going to reach dangerous warming here or not at all, or there's only been this much. Here's how they're distorting it. He's measuring from a baseline of 2012, not pre-industrial. Just quick one-off things, you know. You get the initial impact of the content and sometimes the cartoonish response of whoever I'm exposing, which then sets off, you know, it just... The smart ones don't say anything and just hope that the video goes away. But then what else the content does is it just sort of... In the public consciousness, there's just a better ability to counter this rhetoric day to day. So I hope that very much, right? If somebody is a friend who's an anti-vaxxer or a young earth creationist or something like that, I love it. You know, sometimes I get emails saying, hey, I was able to talk my uncle down from, you know, anti-vax or flat earth or something, because I watched your video and I knew what to say when he said all of that crap that all of them say. That in my video, I go through all of the things they say and debunk them, right? And so if you can watch my content, you can use that in your own life.
I certainly hope so. Yeah. I mean, I understand that it sounds cynical and...
You're not wrong. There's nothing anyone can say to convince 100% of the people in a cult that they're in a cult. You can't do it, right? But you can pick off some on the periphery and then that has, you know, an echoing effect and... you just do what you can, you know? I mean, it's a war. It's a long war here. But, yeah, you fight.
And it's going to get so much worse.
It's going to get a lot worse.
And I have my own version of this that I've struggled with, which was there was a campaign to prevent the approval of the MDMA by the FDA. I don't know if you heard that they rejected. Mm-hmm. And there was a group that was paid to run this campaign to frighten people with the idea that MDMA psychotherapy would essentially promote an epidemic of sexual abuse by psychotherapists on the basis of one of the 300 trial participants was spooned by a therapist and then had a sexual relationship for 2 years with the therapist after. Mm-hmm. And the therapist lost their medical license and all ties were severed and it was, you know, there was a disciplinary action. Everything that could be done was done. It was unanimously acknowledged to have been a breach of ethics and it was unacceptable, but they leveraged this event to make this claim that you can't have MDMA psychotherapy. I think what people suspected actually is they were like, oh, it's Pfizer, it's Big Pharma. And I knew that wasn't the case. But I also very strongly suspected that they were being paid by someone. Mm-hmm. And eventually I found one person that was paying them. It was a little bit a partial explanation, but then there was basically a bizarre personal vendetta. It really didn't even have anything to do with business. Really, really bizarre situation. So finally, a journalist friend of mine was able to get this organization to admit to having paid this activist group. It was published in Wired about a month ago, and people just kind of ignored it. I thought this would be the moment, like, this is it. They were paid $185,000, and people would say, oh, but I mean, weren't they opposed to MDMA before they were paid this money? Right. So, I mean, can you really say that the money meant anything at all? And it's like, it is sort of discouraging seeing those sorts of responses, because it begs the question, is any evidence sufficient?
Yeah.
And when people have this desire to believe a certain thing, how do you get them out of it?
Yeah, there's no, there's just no silver bullet. You just do what you can, you know. I mean, I think that, the truth needs to be amplified as much as possible. There needs to be as many people with social media followings or whatever kind of internet followings championing truth and justice as there are these, you know, the Rogan sphere and, you know, all of these kinds of frauds that are peddling disinformation, right? There needs to be as much noise countering them as there is noise on that side. I think it's very disproportionate at the moment. But if you don't do it, right, there are plenty of rational people out there who won't know what's going on if nobody speaks up, right? If that story isn't shared, then truly nobody will know that that's the case.
There's also this issue that many of the charlatans are charismatic and interesting. Not always, but a number of them are, right? Eric Weinstein certainly sounds like a
sounds smart
person,
yeah.
or at least maybe superficially sounds like a smart person.
Yeah.
And a real scientist, one of the things that I find characterizes a lot of real scientists in their style of communication is that it's often the complete opposite. They're endlessly qualifying every statement. Preliminary evidence suggests that under experimental conditions, it may be the case that this drug is exerting an antidepressant-like effect in rodents, yeah. Right? And the phrasing is responsible and factual, but the result is that people are less, they want to compress it into something pithier and more interesting. And so the people that rise to the top are the ones who are willing to abandon that nuance and give the people the dramatic headline that they're looking for. And I say this as someone that actually thinks that science is profoundly interesting. This is something that I struggle with as well, is this question of how do you get people interested in the real beauty of truth in the real world.
Right.
Like I hate this whole unweaving the rainbow stuff, that there's like a mystery to the world that is destroyed by science.
Couldn't be further from the truth.
Couldn't be further from the truth. And I feel like if you can get people into this mindset of recognizing the beauty of investigating the mysteries of the natural world through scientific processes, that it's like the greatest gift you can possibly give someone.
Sure.
And so this is something that I struggle with. I mean, one of the things that I've found pedagogically very useful is drugs. Like, I'm not someone that was born with a innate interest in chemistry. For me, chemistry was always, pretty much everything I've ever learned in chemistry has always been, I want to make a drug, or I'm interested in making a drug, or how can this reaction be harnessed in order to make a drug?
Mm-hmm.
And like maybe to some chemists, they would hear that and think, oh, that's a lesser motivation. You should be interested in the physical nature.
Making drugs is a perfectly good goal, right?
Right. But I think also crucially, you know, if you're like approaching a person on the street and you say, hey, you want to learn about a Diels-Alder reaction?
Yeah.
They'd say, why? And then if you asked an organic chemistry professor, they'd say, oh, well, it's very useful for understanding frontier molecular orbital theory and pericyclic reactions. And it will get you out of this whole, you know, nucleophile attacks, electrophile mindset.
That's
and,
true. That's
and
a perfect example. Yeah.
That's what they would say. But again, to the person on the street, they'd say, what the fuck does that
any
mean?
Of those words,
yeah. Why is this even remotely important? And but to me, the answer would be, because you can use this to make ultrapotent opioids like buprenorphine and ultrapotent psychedelics related to buprenorphine and stimulants like phencamphamine or whatever. And that's the only reason I've ever done Diels-Alder reactions is to make drugs.
Yeah.
So like this is kind of, I think, the fundamental pedagogical question for me hasn't, people say, how do I learn chemistry? What book do I read to learn chemistry? I've probably told people to, you know, get copies of Organic Chemistry as a Second Language literally hundreds of times. Yeah. But every time I do it, I know that I'm not really answering their question because they don't want to.
They don't want to sit and do the work and learn like students do in a university.
Yeah.
They want a shortcut.
But most importantly, I would have so much more confidence in their ability if they said, I really seriously want to learn how to make LSD. Mm-hmm. Like, I really, really want to do this. How do I equip myself to learn how to make LSD? And if I said, okay, well, you should probably, you know, learn about resonance forms and you should learn about functional groups and you should be able to recognize which of the nitrogen atoms is basic.
I mean, to learn how to synthesize molecules is to learn what and how molecules are, right? It's to learn how molecules behave, right? In order to nudge molecules to do a thing you want them to do, you have to know what it is that they do under particular circumstances, right? So that's organic chemistry for me was what got me wanting to, you know, study chemistry more seriously, because it was that. It was just like, oh my God, like I'm learning how the rules of the molecular world, right?
With this extremely practical application, like you can now make stuff as a result of knowing this. And so I've always been struck by, I make these videos about making drugs and how many people are saying, oh, I decided to major in chemistry because I got interested in it as a result of watching your video about making MDMA or whatever. And I think that that is one we're talking at length about whether or not these debunks are an effective strategy for convincing people. But one thing that I'm very confident about is that they're effective pedagogical tools. Mm-hmm. I would be, I'm sure actually enormous numbers of people are sitting through discussions of economics and cosmology and physics that they would never even consider watching because it's in this context of you outing a charlatan.
Conveniently, I have all of this tutorial-based content if you choose that you want to gain some of the fundamental understanding. So
so I think it's a great tool for that purpose, and I'm sure you're aware of that, and which is why I appreciate that you go into such detail. Or same thing with the climate frauds, and it is so easy. Like you did a recent video about what is his name, Matt Ridley or something. I'd actually read his viral book. And I think what's so interesting, I don't know if you've had this experience where you know, there's certain domains where I'm very knowledgeable, pharmacology and some chemistry, where if somebody's saying something that's ridiculous, I can identify it immediately, assuming that it's very ridiculous, maybe not some kind of like nuanced ridiculousness. Right. But when it comes to these domains where I'm far less knowledgeable, like, you know, I read that book and the entire time, I don't know, I'm kind of on the fence about lab leak stuff. I lean toward the official non-lab leak explanation, but it wouldn't take that much to push me in the other direction. And you say, oh, the Mojang mine, they isolated a coronavirus and then one of the lab technicians got sick. And I think, oh, okay. It never even occurred to me that that guy was a charlatan. And I don't know about the woman that wrote it. She's, I think, like a credentialed virologist.
Lena Chan.
I don't think like anyone is necessarily immune to this sort of stuff. Like it's pretty insidious. And
well, the thing about lab leak is of all the kind of conspiratorial stuff out there, it's the most accessible because it's possible, right? We're leaning towards that. That's not what happened, right? The zoonotic origin remains what experts are say happened, you know, but it's not physically impossible. It's not like anything that's like so easily disprovable on the basis of scientific principles, right? Something that's, you know, flat earth is, it cannot be, right? Or this thing, this vaccine causes autism, it cannot be, right? I know that this is wrong, right? So it should be very easy to craft rhetoric to convince someone of something when it is indeed possible. So I think that was an easy angle for somebody like Matt Ridley. But yeah, then the problem with this climate stuff is that it is very disprovable on the basis of raw data. But yeah, it's just in general, I think all of this comes down to the incredible necessity for science communication. We're seeing the term science communicator is still so new that most people don't even know what it is. Right. When I tell people I'm a science communicator, in fact, I was a science communicator before I knew that's what I was. Someone told me I'm a science communicator in like 2017. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess that's true. I think that societally speaking, we're just sort of realizing that the chasm between frontier scientific knowledge and the ability of the general public to comprehend science has grown just so vast since, like, say, the turn of the 20th century, that and the stakes are so high now with the advent of the internet and how thoroughly and pervasively and in increasing numbers there are people out there who are trying to deceive the public, that there's emerged this tremendous need for career science communicators, people who just sit around and think about how to explain science to people so that they won't fall for charlatans and so that, you know, they won't be led astray and all these things. We're barely catching up, or we haven't caught up, right? There's a need for this work. And then here's the number of science communicators that are out there, right? We need more. I go to universities and I try to encourage science students to think about SciComm as a career option, right? And here's how you can get into it. And all, you know, I give a presentation and everything. I'm out there trying to recruit, right? I want there to be 10 times as many science communicators, working, because the need is there and there's so much at stake, you know? It's really urgent. It's really urgent. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I wonder about, cause this is something that I've certainly experienced, is when you position yourself as somebody who is telling the truth and debunking lies, you know that there's going to be people who are frothing at the mouth,
oh, yeah,
waiting for you to make a mistake, any mistake. Oh, okay. So this would happen to me with my own stuff. Like, I knew that there were a lot of people that really would have just loved nothing more than for me to make a mistake. And I do make mistakes, mm-hmm, right? It's like, I just released a video actually with like a really weird mistake where I referred to something as a tautomer and then didn't realize afterwards that it's not technically a tautomer. And it's like, fuck.
It's a different isomer.
It's, yeah, it was a resonance form, not a tautomer. Mm-hmm. And so then I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, no one, I guess the other thing is like with these technical errors, people tend to not even notice them, which is another kind of frightening thing. It's like the sorts of things that people notice tend to be not even errors. But I found when I was doing a lot more video work that it had become like, I was like literally losing sleep over these insanely pedantic concerns. Like, yeah. One was, I'd done this thing about toad conservation, and historically people had referred to the material that is squirted out of the glands of this toad as a venom, but some definitions of the word venom are exclusively something that is injected by a fang.
Yes.
That's like, not every, certainly not the dictionary definition of venom. Some are more expansive and include any defensive secretion that is emitted in response to threat or whatever. So kind of depending on how you define the word venom, and historically venom had been the word used to describe this secretion. And I remember like actually not sleeping, just being like, did I do the right, like there's a war on the horizon over whether or not venom is correct.
The thing is about these minutiae, it's never the main point. It's like, of course there are occasional small errors in my videos. I did one on Terrence Howard and I was making fun of some math and I didn't realize that one, like a couple of the symbols, I was actually wrong, that it was an appropriate use of a particular symbol or something like that. It doesn't matter. Terrence Howard is still batshit insane and everything. He's just complete fraud, right? It's never going to be the case that I make a video exposing a fraud and it turns out that they're not a fraud. they're a fraud. If I'm exposing someone, they're a gigantic fraud. If I get one datum incorrect, or, you know, I use a word, one word slightly incorrectly or something, you know, or I mispronounce one word, right? I didn't know that it's Viscount, not Viscount, right? Who cares? Who cares? And of course, and I got probably 200 comments correcting my pronunciation of that. Who cares? Yeah, leave him up. I said a word wrong. I did. Okay. Who cares? The point is, this guy's a lying fraud. We're all on board with that, right? And that always ends up being the case. So, you know, you just, nobody's perfect. We're all human. And, yeah, let the small errors roll off your back, right? The core of what you're doing has to be robust, but that's it.
But it will, of course, be used against you.
How? Like, if somebody uses me mispronouncing a word against me in a way that's completely inconsequential, it just shows how ridiculous and petty and unsubstantive their argument is.
Yes. So. Yeah. Yeah. This is the truth, and I do really hope that it works. I mean, I've even shown I had like a kind of discouraging, maybe even depressing interaction with someone where I was showing them one of your Terrence Howard videos. And the response was, well, how does he know that Terrence Howard is wrong?
From all of the things I said in the video. Yes.
But it was, again, this comes back to the sort of the futility of these interactions, where I started thinking, wow, we've got to go way, way back to answer that question.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of this is just, it's a problem of human psychology, right? It's not a problem of access to information or anything. But that's why content isn't enough. There has to be follow-up in someone's personal life. Like tonight in a live debate where I'm not just debunking a charlatan and then their idiot fans come to comment on my video, which they didn't watch, and regurgitate all the things that I debunked in that video. They're going to be on stage and I'm going to hammer them over the head with, you know, exposing all of their lies right to their face. That's something that you don't get to do all the time. And if you're interacting with someone who's a follower of that person, right, you just kind of have to back them into a corner and not let them escape. And like, but what about this? Well, nope, don't change the subject. What about this? Like, there just has to be responsible follow-up from someone in the personal sphere of that person, such that they can't continually evade this information that necessarily dismantles what that aspect of their worldview or whatever it is.
What do you think about the ethics of talking to people who are wrong? Because this is a big struggle for me, where...
Platforming charlatans, you mean?
Well, that would be probably the least generous way of characterizing it. But I'm very interested in people that have weird beliefs, right? Yeah. This, you know, I spend a lot of time talking to indigenous people. Their beliefs are not scientific. Their beliefs are still very interesting to me. Some of the most interesting conversations I've ever had about chemistry were with a chemist who'd spent his entire life making PCP, but had no concept whatsoever of even what a molecule is. His like purely empirical understanding of synthesis came just from like, when you do this, it turns this color. Yeah. This is this. This is when you add sodium hydroxide, it melts the crystal. You know, he's not like, oh, it's deprotonating the basic nitrogen. Yeah. And I thought it was like totally fascinating. All of his interpretations from a scientific perspective were completely wrong, but it was like one of the more interesting conversations I've ever had with somebody about chemistry. And I've, you know, grown up, my dad has interviewed tons and tons of weird people. This is why I first reached out to you, is he was working on this series of interviews with so-called smartest men in the world. Mm-hmm. And he's doing this at a time where there was faith in the intelligence of the viewer, where you could interview a charlatan who's the self-proclaimed smartest man in the world, like Chris Langan, and you would have faith that the viewer would be able to call into question, yeah, and maybe to even recognize the irony of the possibility that the so-called smartest man in the world could be an idiot. Yeah. And now we live in a culture where that is considered deeply irresponsible, and there is a legitimate argument to be made. This is one of the conflicts that I feel with someone like Joe Rogan, because part of me wants to stand up and say, well, we should live in a society where people have the right to have conversations with Terrence Howard, mm-hmm, if they want to. Even if I disagree with everything that Terrence Howard says, I don't want to live in a world where you're not allowed to talk to
weirdos. It's illegal for him to speak. Yeah.
Yeah.
And almost nobody is condoning the illegality of conversations. But inevitably, you do get those people. I'll make a video debunking something and they'll say, well, freedom of speech. Yeah, freedom of speech. They're saying it and I'm saying this. What's the problem? Right? I definitely understand what you're saying, where the credulity of the masses has just ballooned out of control, which is hard to wrap your head around because genetically we're no different. So what's going on? I mean, it's all just a reaction of the internet and how information is disseminated. But yeah, it's definitely alarming. But there just has to be, like, I just want more people doing what I'm doing and in their own way, right? Nobody has to copy my style. I have a very abrasive way that I do it. And other people, other science communicators have completely different tone. And that's great. I want everybody doing it a different way, their own way. But there just has to be, you know, some anti-vaxxer goes on Joe Rogan. The next day, there have to be 30 videos all just like completely dismantling all of the rhetoric, you know. It has to be neutralized.
Yeah.
You know, rather than saying, Joe Rogan, your podcast is illegal now, because that'll, you know, like you said, only empower him as a martyr.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about that, like that sort of severe form of censorship. It's, yeah. For me, it's actually more sort of creative, because I do personally like, I have a personal love of talking to weirdos. And and so this is something that I struggle with. It happened recently.
But there, let's also make sure to distinguish between weirdos and liars, right? Like, there are anti-vaxxers who knowingly tell lies for money that kill people. That's who I'm going to be debating today. And that's categorically different from even someone like Terrence Howard, who I genuinely believe is mentally ill and thinks that he is a genius.
Yeah.
So even there, and then that's obviously very, very different from, like, say, indigenous people who have certain religious views or something like that. Like, that's not at all the same thing as lying on purpose for money.
Although it's not, you know, I've actually had this experience a couple times where I'm interviewing an indigenous person. They're saying a lot of things that I know will spiritually resonate with viewers because there's a certain logic to it. And they'll, you know, saying like, oh, the psychedelic is like the electricity of the world of God flowing through. And then they'll say something like, and for that reason, gay people shouldn't be, or something. And I'll think like, ooh.
Quite a leap.
Like, you know, from an anthropological perspective, I think it's irresponsible to censor somebody saying something like that, because now you're basically editorializing and removing like something that's a real component of their worldview. But it's especially unsettling when you realize that they're saying this coupled with statements that will resonate with a lot of people, and that a certain segment will be like, oh, interesting. Wow. Those indigenous people, like, they're really like in touch with the plant world and the spiritual nature of plants, and they also hate gay
maybe
people.
Gay people are bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah, I guess that maybe the final thing would be the slippery slope aspects of all of this. Like, what happens, because I've seen this again in my own life, where a very small family, one of my relatives was always New Age. And I remember as a child, she gave me that book that about how your thoughts change the crystal structure of ice or whatever. And even as a child, thinking like,
yeah,
water, like, I didn't have the word anthropocentric, but I was kind of like, why would we care?
Mechanistically.
Yes. And so it was always a bit of that, you know, and she heals herself with crystals, and she also is very healthy. So it's kind of like, fuck it, you're doing okay.
I'm sure she works out a lot.
Yes,
healthy.
Yeah, there are likely other explanations other than the crystal healing. But the point is that all this stuff was innocuous, that none of this was something that I would say, hey, we have to have a conversation about, you know, the fact that you gave me that book about the crystal structure of water. But I watched as this innocuous New Age belief system gradually turned into
anti-vaxxing.
Trump is going to save the world. I'm, you know, she's a vegetarian. She's been a vegetarian her entire life. I'm buying a gun because Antifa might be coming to get me, you know, and I saw like, oh, wow, it's amazing how there is a slippery slope with irrational.
The alt health to alt right pipeline is very real.
Yeah. So in this slippery slope, what do you think, like, what is the, because I don't think anyone could have predicted how bad things have gotten right now.
Yeah.
So what is the, what is it? I mean, I've seen you allude to, what is it, Project 2020 and all these
2025.
Things. 2025, yeah. Yeah. I don't know very much about this Christian nationalist stuff, but like what is the kind of the thing that you think all of this, I know there's not a single agenda, but what is it that is like this could be leading toward?
I mean, it's leading towards authoritarianism. Trump wants to be a dictator. He looks at Putin and says, I want that. And he's trying to achieve it. I think that he's trying to generate a fervor with which to justify martial law. We may see the midterm elections rescinded. And if that goes over well enough, we may see the 2028 presidential election rescinded. I mean, I think that he's going to do everything he can to expand executive power beyond anything the country has ever seen, and just squash any opposition through a militarized police force, right? Like any kind of protests will be shut down by the National Guard. He will try to flex as much as possible. He wants to be Putin. That's what he wants. And he's going to try, I think. So, yeah, I have a contingency plan, and I might, you know, if things get really bad and people start getting thrown in jail for things that they say, I'm out of here. They start throwing Palestinians in internment camps. We're out. My wife is Palestinian. My kids are half Palestinian.
Yeah.
It's going to get a lot worse. For sure. There's no way that things are going to be business as usual. 2028, he willingly steps down because he's served two terms. And then we get, you know, probably some establishment Democrat in office, you know. I just don't see that happening. He's not going down without a fight. And he has the entire bureaucracy and military and everything at his disposal with which to try to usurp as much power as possible and hang on to it. And Christian nationalists want that. So they're aligned with that as well. They want to stoke the embers of xenophobia and all of that. And you know, Israel has its hands in a lot of that too. They want to keep as much money flowing that way as possible. I don't know. It's going to get really bad. I don't see it getting better anytime soon. You know, there's a chance that it's not going to go exactly the way he wants, and there will be a regime change, and then it'll slowly start to get better. We still have enormous problems, but the problems that this administration is causing are generational problems. What RFK is doing to HHS will be generational problems. The American scientific community. People are leaving the country. Foreign scientists have no interest in coming here. Traditionally, half of American scientists have been the best of the scientists around the world that would come here to work at MIT, Caltech, all this stuff. And due to what RFK is instituting, you know, trying to institute a federal ban on scientists publishing in legitimate journals, they have to publish in the state-run J. Bhattacharya's Journal of Public Health or whatever it's called, and then Trump's immigration policies, right? There's no impetus for brilliant minds to come here from other countries. And then scientists here are getting out. You know, grad students say that they have no interest in trying to find a position in America when they can go to Europe or somewhere else and get something, you know, a much better deal.
It's definitely extremely unsettling. And so many, like, people who are interested in psychedelics have been unusually soft on all of this, because I think a lot of people have some version of this, like, well, maybe my thing will be different. Yeah, this whole vaccine thing is crazy, but he likes psychedelics. Maybe it will be good for psychedelics. Yeah. Maybe it won't be bad for the thing that I care about. I think this is some version of that is happening economically with a lot of people, where they're like, yeah, I don't know if I agree with all this, but like, maybe I won't pay as many taxes, so it will ultimately be okay for me. I think it's really good for people to abandon their selfishness, even if only because it's probably misguided to begin with, and they probably won't even get what they think they're going to get.
I don't think anybody, I don't see how the masses are benefiting at all, right? I mean, we're like, you know, the way that they're trying to like slash Medicaid and stuff like that, like just the public, like there has to come a point where even Trump supporters in large numbers start to realize that they've been bamboozled, right? There has to be a point where like there's only so many people that he can continue to hang on to with his rhetoric when there's actual real world harm coming to their finances and their health and things of that nature. His support will begin to erode, but he's very calculating. So as his support erodes, that's when he will clamp down even further, with whatever tools are at his disposal. Yeah, I don't know. And then all the redistricting that's going on in all the red states will only continue to, you know, he'll continue to have majority support in the House and the Senate to do whatever he wants. Supreme Court, he's decided he's above the Supreme Court, so there's no way to police him there.
Well, I appreciate everything that you've done to raise awareness of the frauds that are promoting these agendas. And I also, really crucially, because I don't know how often this is said, think that they're very educational, not just in the direct application of identifying frauds, but just for learning in general about
general science. Information,
yeah. Yeah. So thank you.
You're very welcome, yeah. And thanks for watching those too, because not enough people do, I feel. Students do, but I would love it if the general public would just watch my chemistry tutorials or geology or whatever topic interests them, because it's all just kind of 101, really easy, accessible stuff. It's not as entertaining as the debunks, but it's, you know, learning is fun.
Yes. Yeah. And I'll link to all this stuff. Any final things you want to promote or draw people to in some way?
Now, channel's at this point a giant smorgasbord. It's 1,800 plus videos, mostly tutorials, but a lot of debunks. And I don't know, I've been doing this for 10 years now, so it's a large library of content. Just look around. Yeah, I just ask the people, look around. Like, don't, I get so many comments of like, hey, will you make this? Will you make that? It's like, I did that, a lot of it. And my homepage could not be better organized. So just take a look, see what I have, you know.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.